had a fantastic workout at the track this morning. And for those that don't know, I am currently training for a sub-5-minute mile. And there's many reasons that I chose the distance of a 1-mile run at that aggressive pace, which isn't all that great in the grand scheme of things when it comes to like the world record, because I think the world record is like 340 something. So a 5-minute mile is pretty respectable for your amateur runner, your weekend warrior, your typical day-to-day person. If you're running a sub-5-minute mile, like, you're cooking. That is one lap around the track. Every lap is a minute and 15 seconds. So you have to hold that for 4 laps without stopping, obviously. And that's a very aggressive pace for anybody, but especially somebody who doesn't necessarily come from a running background. I was a college football player, but I never really did track. I didn't do track at all, actually. So this is all really new to me. But the reason why I chose a sub-5-minute mile is because in order to do that, in order to hit that marker at that pace, it requires you to fucking want it. It requires you to get outside of your comfort zone. There's not one person on this planet, I mean, unless you're, you know, running a sub-4-minute mile, that hits a 5-minute mile and thinks to themselves, oh, that was easy, I could do that breathing through my nose. Not many people can do that, and I sure as heck can't. So in order to do that, I need to put my mind in a very specific state to be able to withstand and endure that pain cave. For you CrossFitters out there, you know what the pain cave is. Fran, we're talking Helen, we're talking anything that's under 5 minutes. And when you go for that, and you really, really go for it, it requires you to go to this really dark place mentally. And most of us are really scared of that place, mentally and physically. Not only is it going to be painful because your lungs are on fire, your body is on fire, your entire, all your muscles are on fire, but also psychologically, it's a dark place. And we do not want to be there. We want to get out of that discomfort as quickly as possible. So what kinds of things happen in your mind when you're experiencing something as intense as that? You start to express self-doubt. You start to tell yourself, it's not worth it. You start to tell yourself, tomorrow will be a better day. Today's too cold, or today's too hot, or today's raining, or today's snowing, or whatever the case may be. I'll feel better tomorrow. I'll be more mentally prepared tomorrow. When that's not always the case, especially for me. I've shied away from that type of pain in the past. And one of the biggest, most important reasons why I chose to run a 5-minute mile is because I need to attack that weakness in order to get over the hump. There's something about that distance and that aggressive pace that it requires that is really, really challenging for me. And I've done it before in the past, but I'm still kind of scared of it. I'm still a little nervous about it. And so that is one of the main reasons why I chose the 1-minute marker. And I've always thought it was cool to run a sub-5-minute mile. And I'm only getting older. So, you know, the clock is ticking. And I turned 40 in May, and I figured, what better way to celebrate my 40th birthday than to go for a 5-minute mile? And I'm pretty confident that I can get it. A couple years ago, for my 38th birthday, I ran a marathon for the second time in my life. The first time was when I was like 24 years old, and I was fresh out of college. I had all the time in the world to train, but I thought it was really cool that I ran my second one, you know, 15 years later. And so from here on out, one of my goals really is for every birthday that passes, I want to do some sort of physical feat that I've never been able to do before. So this year, it's a 5-minute mile. Who knows what it's going to be next year? Maybe it'll be an ultra marathon or a strongman competition or something like that. But this year, it's a 5-minute mile. And that is the number one reason that I want to hit 5 minutes, is because I want to attack that weakness of mine, quote unquote, which is being comfortable or not being afraid of that pain cave. The second reason I have started to take up running a little bit more is because, and I was just talking about this with somebody last night, they were going through a very stressful time. They are going through a stressful time, this person I was talking to. And I was telling them, I was saying, look, like, I know it might sound weird, and I know it might just sound like I'm only giving you this advice because this is what I'm doing at the current moment, but it couldn't be further from the truth. I've always noticed that when times are tough, when things seem to be going bad, when your life seems to be falling apart, when your relationships suck, your job sucks, your finances suck, whatever the case may be, when I'm running, everything feels good. It's not only a temporary moment of pleasure because you get that runner's high, you get that those endorphins, your lungs start to burn and that feels good. And there's something about being outside in particular that really, really puts icing on the cake because you're out in nature, you're hearing the birds chirp, you're smelling the fresh air, the pine, wherever part of the country you're in. And there's something primitive about being outside. Now, the thing that I love the most, though, is that when you are in that rut, when you are recovering from something traumatic, when you are in a place that you don't want to be, there's nothing quite like the accomplishment of going for a good run. Whether it's just down the block and back, whether it's running a couple laps around a track, whether it's going the distance and doing the full mile or the full 10K or the full marathon, whatever you're capable of, whatever that distance is or however long you can run, there's something so rewarding about accomplishing a physical feat that gives you the confidence to go accomplish another task. So if your relationships suck, right, and you can't find a partner, or you can't even go on a date, or things don't seem to be going too well in that department, you start running, you start exercising, you start lifting, what have you, you start feeling better about yourself. Well, now guess what? You don't even really care about looking for somebody to go on a date with. All you care about is your next goal at the gym or your next goal at the track. And the next thing you know, you're in your zone and you're making all of this progress. And now all of a sudden, we've been there before, right? Where it's like when you least expect it or when you least want it, somebody pops into your life that you now want to date. And why is that? It's because you're so focused on yourself, your goals, whether they're physical or financial or career, whatever your goals are, when you're focused on those things, that is attractive. I mean, I've been attracted to many different types of people in my life, but the one thing stands is that the most attractive thing about somebody else is when they're passionate, when they have their thing, no matter what that is, whether they're into cars or into art or into fitness, whatever their thing is, if they're passionate about that thing, that in and of itself is sexy. So that's why when you start to focus on yourself and you start to accomplish these goals, you become more attractive in and of itself. So those are the two reasons why running has been such a big part of my life lately, is because one, it makes me feel good. Two, it allows me to focus on myself and prioritize myself, so therefore other areas of my life will thrive. And then the second one is the specific distance of the 5-minute mile is something that I am so, so scared of. But at the same time, I'm so, so freaking excited to accomplish it. So that's what I've been up to the past couple of months. And, you know, I kind of dove right into that just now. But I apologize to everybody who was expecting podcast releases who didn't get them. And let me explain why. Obviously, reacclimating to society and getting out of prison has been very, very challenging for anybody, and I'm no different. And, you know, I jumped right back into the podcast stuff and jumped right back into other things, and I realized, okay, I got to pump the brakes. This a little bit too much too soon, and I need to focus on getting my mind right. I need to focus on the path that I'm going to be going on, and then I can formulate a plan and attack it from there. And I know it kind of just seems like new year, new me or whatever, and that's why I'm putting out podcasts. It just so happened that the new year fell right in line with me kind of getting my mind right. So I appreciate your guys' your support. I appreciate some of your guys' messages on social media. A couple of you took screenshots of the fact that I was the most downloaded or listened to podcast on Spotify. Super cool. Shout out to all those who sent me those. But I'm definitely committed to continuing this podcast so that you guys can grow, answer you guys' questions, and just, you know, continue to update you guys on what I've been doing. So again, thank you for your patience and everything that you guys have done for me. Okay, so next topic is one of the things that I really wanted to hit on, especially since the holidays just ended and the new year is now amongst us. Or is it among us? I can never figure that one out. Among or amongst? I think it's amongst us. Among us. I think it's among us. And one of the things that we were talking about was stressors. And this person reached out to me and said, hey, look, like XYZ has happened to me. There was a death in the family. They were moving locations, physical locations from one home to the next. And a couple other things that were a little bit more personal that were happening with this person. And the first thing that they wanted to do was continue their rigorous exercise program. And I said, you got to slow your roll here. You got to slow your roll. You got to realize that exercise in and of itself is a stressor. Exercise in and of itself adds more stress to your life. I know it might be a stress relief, but your body identifies it as a stressor. And so when you are working out, it is placing stress on your body. That's why your body adapts to whatever it is you're doing. So if you're going out for a long run and you've gone a mile further than you've ever gone before, well, guess what? Your body is going to adapt to that additional stressor that you've never experienced. If you are lifting weights and you're doing bicep curls and you're doing 5 extra pounds more than you've ever done before, well, guess what? Your body is going to respond to that stress by adapting, whether it be growing or getting stronger, what have you. But either way, it is a stressor on your body. So knowing that and laying that foundation that exercise, although it's stress relieving, I don't want to confuse the psychological psychological benefits of exercise and how that can be a stress relief, excuse me, and confuse that with the fact that exercise is a stress on the body that requires it to adapt. Two different things. However, rigorous exercise. We're talking like, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours in the day, 2 hours in the gym per day. We're talking heavy lifting, heavy running or sprinting, that sort of thing. That is going to place a lot of stress on your body. And when you are already in a vulnerable state because of a death in the family or moving or changing jobs or whatever life stressor that you're going through right now, it's only adding to that. And this is in when I look back at a lot of people that I've trained and trained with, when they get injured, a lot of times it's during these stressful moments because they're putting themselves at, you're already stressed, and then you go to the gym and you add that icing on the cake, and then boom, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Had that been, you know, at a different time of their life, they probably would not have gone through that injury or that setback simply because they weren't as stressed out. So I tell you this because I want you to analyze your own life. I know you're fired up to get back on the wagon or start your new fitness program, but what is going on in your life right now that is adding stress and preventing you maybe from going full intensity? So if you just had a stressful holidays, whether it be because of family engagements or just the New Year's and, you know, reflecting on your 2021 and it maybe not being exactly what you wanted it to be, or feeling a little bit down because you're not where you want to be in life. These are all really, really common ones. Whether you don't have a romantic partner, maybe the relationship with your kids isn't great, maybe your parent is not doing well health-wise, whatever the case may be, analyze your current circumstances from really step back and look at this and think, what are my current circumstances and what kind of stressors is my life bringing to the table right now? From there, take it from there and say, look, do I even have the bandwidth to add rigorous, intense exercise to my life? And the answer that you'll find is that an overwhelming majority of time, the answer is no. You don't have the mental bandwidth, or you don't have the physical bandwidth to do that. And that could be for a multitude of reasons, but I'm not going to get into that. What I really want to hammer home, though, is be easy on yourself. If you have all of these compounding issues piling up, something has to give. And if you add intense exercise to that compounding list, well, guess what? Your body's going to look at it and say, well, I don't really absolutely need that physical exercise thing because we got all these things flying at me from other directions. I'm going to ditch the exercise and I'm going to tweak a knee, or I'm going to tweak an elbow, or I'm going to send a signal to this person's body that says, look, stop exercising me so hard because this is not what I need right now. Now, from there, realize that stopping all exercise isn't always the answer either. And so this is the conversation. This is how the conversation with my friend led me down this direction. My advice to this person was stop the hour and a half, 2 hours hard, heavy lifting in the gym, pivot, settle down a little bit, and transition to a 30 to 45 minute calisthenic and cardio session. And if you really want to, maybe stick with back squats, deadlifts, and bench press just to kind of maintain your muscle mass and strength. But don't go crazy. Just stick with sets of 10, sets of 15. Make sure that the weight is light. Focus on good form. And then just go for a fucking walk. Just go for a walk. Don't try to get after it. You don't have to be, you know, throwing up every time you work out. You don't have to be lying in a pool of your own sweat each and every time you exercise in order for it to count as a productive training session. It's the unfortunate thing about social media, the internet, what's sexy on, you know, visually is those hard workouts. Nobody wants to see somebody walking down the street and say, look at them crushing their workout today. Nobody wants to do that. Those are the hard things that people do, the successful people do. But those are the things that don't really look all that great on camera or on film. And so what does look good on film? It's the heavy lifting, it's the sweat, it's the, you know, it's the muscle ups, it's the pull ups, it's all these cool things that look great, but at the same time, it's just not sustainable. So what I'm getting at, folks, is be easy on yourself, identify your stressors, address them, don't forget about them. And really ask yourself, do I have the bandwidth mentally, emotionally, and physically to add vigorous exercise to my day, to my week, to my month? And if the answer is no, pivot into something a little less intense, 30, 40, 50 minutes on the treadmill, walking or walking around the block, or maybe some light push-ups, squats, sit-ups, that sort of thing. All right, listener questions. Can I eat the same foods in bulk? For example, lots of oatmeal for carbs. Okay, so the short answer is yes, you can. In fact, this is something that I do. Especially when my life is busy or, you know, the budget is tight, I tend to just buy a bunch of the same freaking foods and add up all my calories for the day. And then I take all of this one carb, all of this one protein, all of this one fat, and then chop it into 4 to 5 different servings, package it all up real nice in a Tupperware container, and then either take them on the go or have them in the refrigerator so that when I get hungry, boom, I'm eating them. And then in my mind, I know that in order to get all of my daily caloric intake that's appropriate based on my exercise, I need to eat, you know, 4 of these containers or 3 of these containers or 5 of these containers. Now, I don't necessarily recommend that. I do recommend a well-balanced and variety of foods, but you can do that. Plus, it's boring as hell. So, and I recognize that not everybody is as psycho as me, and they aren't able to eat, you know, chicken and rice for every single meal throughout the day, including breakfast and dessert. So I realize that, and I acknowledge that. However, It goes back to the initial question: is can you eat in bulk? And the answer truly is yes. Now, here is the caveat. Is that number one, if you're eating the same food, there's two caveats. One, if you're eating the same food over and over again, there's a strong possibility that you're going to be deficient in some micronutrients. You know, your vitamins and minerals. So if you're eating a crap ton of white rice, well, there's not all that much micronutrients in that. So you're probably going to need to supplement with a multivitamin or a different vitamin in order to make up for the lost minerals and vitamins for that particular food. If you are eating only chicken and for your protein, well, you're probably going to need to bump up your fat in some way, shape, or form. So I'll just use the chicken and rice as an example. If all you're eating is chicken and rice, you're either going to need to make sure that you are either eating some sort of fat on the side, whether it be like olive oil or almonds or some other nut or seed that's going to be high in fat so that you can get your fat calories, or eat the skin, you know, something like that. That'd be a good example. But my point in saying that is, in order to get all of your macro and micronutrients, you're going to need to be mindful of your approach. So it's fine to do that. It's fine to do the oatmeal and the chicken and rice thing. However, you just need to say, okay, what does oatmeal have a lot of? What does oatmeal lack? And then make it up in the form of a vitamin or other food sources. The other problem with that is, if you are sensitive to gluten, or if you're sensitive to any other type of food, a lot of people have recently gotten into doing the blood work test, where you get like 70 different common foods like eggs and chicken and steak and bread and gluten, all that stuff, and they get their blood work done to see what they're sensitive or allergic to. And some people pop up with like very minor sensitivities or allergies to certain foods. And that's fine. Like, you could probably get away with eating like a slice of bread or one egg or something like that and not really see the results of that sensitivity or that allergy. But then what if you eat 12 eggs in a day and you have that minor allergy? Well, then it's going to be exacerbated. You're going to see and you're going to feel it. And that's actually something that happens to me when I do eat massive amounts of eggs, especially the yolks, is that it gives me like this indigestion that makes me very, very uncomfortable. And not to get too deep into it, but basically on the other end, it doesn't come out very well. And so that is a sensitivity of mine and a minor allergy of mine that gets brought up to the forefront when I eat massive amounts of eggs in bulk. And this also applies to people with gluten sensitivities. And so if you have any aversion or sensitivity or allergy to gluten, then you eat a bunch of oatmeal or you eat a bunch of bread in bulk, well, you're going to pay for it, you know, with your digestive system. And you might even pay for it with, like, you know, hair follicles falling out, your nails getting all flaky, your skin getting ashy, stuff like that. You might start to see these things manifest in other ways that wouldn't necessarily manifest in these ways had you been eating a well-balanced diet. So short answer to that, yes, you absolutely can. You can definitely get all of your macros and micros in bulk by eating certain foods day in and day out. With the caveat of, if you have some sensitivities, then you're going to have to be careful which foods you choose, and you're going to need to make sure that you are supplementing with some sort of a multivitamin, because you're going to be it's very, very likely that you're going to be deficient in other things if you only eat certain foods day in and day out. All right, next question. When should I mix things up in my training routine? And okay, so this is actually probably one of the factors that I think about most when it comes to writing someone's exercise program. It's super easy to write a cookie cutter exercise program. It's like, okay, cool. Like, here's a full body, you know, calisthenics routine. Boom, go. And it's really easy to write something like that, but it's hard to write something that works week in and week out, month in and month out, and even harder is year in and year out. So the short answer to this is every 4 to 6 weeks. So it's kind of a broad range there. It's you know, between 1 or 2 months is when you should mix up your training routine. 6 weeks is a little bit of a sweet spot there, but it depends on what you're doing. So if you're doing high intensity work. So like, for example, my mile training, I'm definitely going to need to be going in a little bit of waves with my intensity, because you can only maintain that level of intense training for so long. I wouldn't recommend super intense training for more than 4 to 6 weeks. After 4 to 6 weeks, that's when your body starts to break down. So if you're doing really, really, really intense training, I would say every 4 to 6 weeks to kind of narrow it down a little bit. Be on the safe side, 4 weeks. If you're doing less intense work, if you're doing less intense work like walking or, you know, push-ups that are really easy for you, or sit-ups that are really easy for you, or really lightweight stuff like that, you could probably get away with doing those a little longer, like closer to that 2 month range. And those are the two extremes, you know, the less intense work and the high intense work. You're going to want to stick to that 4 to 6 week range for the more intense work to switch it up. And then for the less intense, you're going to want to stick to like the 2 month range. Now, no matter what type of exercise you're doing, doesn't matter what you're doing, whether it's intense, moderate, if it's walking, if it's running, if it's calisthenics, if it's weightlifting, if it's jiu-jitsu, it doesn't matter what type of exercise you do need to mix it up. That is the key here. You do need to mix it up. So I was talking about this earlier in some form when it comes to your body adapting. So there's this like old saying, like, we got to shock your muscles into growing. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's like a good catchphrase. It's a good marketing phrase that really speaks to a lot of people, and it kind of makes sense. Like, yeah, like if you haven't been doing this one thing, then you do this one thing and all of a sudden it's going to shock your muscles into growing. That doesn't happen. Shocking your muscles into growing is basically the layman's term for muscular adaptation. And so anytime you exercise your body in any way, shape, or form, whether it's cardio or strength training, your body either is plateauing or it's getting stronger. There's really no such thing as maintaining. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. Your body doesn't really have this like switch or trigger where it just says, okay, I'm just going to stay right here and maintain. You're either doing something that's requiring it to adapt and get stronger, or you're not doing enough and it's actually getting weaker and atrophying. So when it comes to mixing it up, everybody needs to mix up their training program, and it needs to be thoughtful and intelligent. The reason being is if you do the same thing over and over again, eventually your body is going to adapt to whatever it is you're doing. So for example, if I run at 5 miles per hour for 30 minutes every day, The first couple weeks are going to be a struggle. The first couple weeks, I'm going to be like, damn, this is too much. Maybe I bit off more than I could chew. I don't know if I should be doing this. My calves hurt, this, that, and the other, right? After about 2 weeks, you start to kind of feel like, okay, I kind of got this. Like, I might even be able to bump it up to like 5.5 miles per hour, or I might even be able to go 5 miles per hour for 35 minutes or whatever the case may be, because your body has adapted to that. But if you just stay at 5 miles per hour for 30 minutes and don't change a thing, after about 4 weeks, your body is pretty much adapted to whatever you're doing. It's either gotten injured because what you were trying to do was way too aggressive and you weren't ready for it, or it's adapted. And so that's what's called the plateau. So when people say like, oh, when I started my fitness program, or I started at my CrossFit box and man, I got jacked, like I lost like 20 pounds in the first 6 months, and now I'm just kind of like, I don't know, I'm just kind of going through the motions. And in fact, like, I can't even do as many pull-ups as I used to be able to do. Like, what gives? Well, your body has adapted to whatever it is you were doing. And so now you got to the point where you needed to change up your routine, or you were going to plateau because your body had already developed the musculature and the stamina to withstand everything that it was doing, or everything that you were doing to your body, essentially. Like, your body is very responsive to its environment. So if it's not being used, it's going to atrophy. It's going to get weaker because it's going to identify the fact that, hey, look, I'm in an environment right now where it's pretty safe, and I don't need to run, I don't need to pick up heavy things, I don't need to fight anybody. It's pretty safe. It's pretty safe to say right now that I'm cool with shedding some muscle mass, or I'm cool with getting weaker because I need to preserve my energy. I'm speaking like it's my body. I need to preserve my energy for the famine, for the winter, for, you know, to sustain life when things are less than optimal. Or what you're doing is you're out hunting and gathering, or you're out working out, right? Or you're doing things that are requiring your body to strengthen itself and progress. And then once it's reached that level where you keep doing the same thing over and over again, then your body is going to just be cool with that and you're going to plateau. So no matter what you're doing, whether it's intense or lower intensity, you got to switch up your program every 4 to 8 weeks. All right, final question is, are there benefits to fasted cardio, or is that bro science? First of all, I love the bro science reference. I had an entire episode years ago with Dr. Jimmy Bagley, who's a legit muscle doc out of the San Francisco State University Muscle Lab. Fantastic facility. And I want to say he answered this one. Maybe somebody else that I had on the podcast answered this one, but basically the answer is that it is bro science. It's basically a good practice for those who are in two realms. Number one, if you're trying to lose weight, I would recommend fasted cardio. So for those of the, that don't know what fasted cardio is you're basically going to go out and do a bout of cardio, whatever that may be, whether it's like a CrossFit circuit training or a run or a row or what have you, and you haven't eaten. And the definition of fasting is a little arbitrary, but usually what it means is like first thing in the morning, don't eat breakfast, go do your cardio. So you basically haven't eaten for anywhere from 6 to 8 hours. And so you're basically in this state of a fast, and you're going to go do your cardio. So a lot of people believe that somehow, some way, you're going to burn more fat that way, because your body doesn't have whatever, you're in a fasted state. But the science behind that doesn't stick. The science behind that does not differentiate what your caloric deficit comes from. So caloric deficit, all right? So eating less calories than you are consuming, that's what really matters. So if you are trying to lose weight, I would recommend fasted cardio, simply because doing it that way is going to be more likely to put you in a caloric deficit throughout your entire day than not. And then the other one is for those endurance athletes who are trying to train their body and their mind for those final miles, those maybe the last half or even like the last quarter, whatever your distance, we're talking marathon, ultra marathon, so 26.2 and up. There's such a thing called the wall, quote unquote. And that is essentially when your body has run out of glycogen storage and carbohydrates readily available for your body to operate on. So for those that don't know, you have three sources of energy that your body will rely on. Number one, whatever you just ate. So if you ate a candy bar and you go for a run, your body's going to use the sugar from that candy bar for that run. If you are fasted cardio and you ate a big meal the night before, you might not be having all of that, those carbohydrates as energy floating through your bloodstream the next morning, but what it will have been stored in is what's called your glycogen stores. It's kind of like your gas tank. It's kind of like, and then you have a gas tank with full of energy, but once that comes unglued, well then it's the opposite. You only have two. The glycogen storage is your reserve tank. So the glycogen storage is kind of like your reserve tank. And then once that's tapped out, well, now your body is actually, well, I guess there is a third one. I was right the first time. The third one is your fat stores, but that takes a lot longer to convert into energy. So once your glycogen storage runs out though, that's when you hit that wall, because now your body needs to like chill out for a second while it converts fat into energy so that you can go continue your run. That takes a little bit more time. So if you are that athlete, the endurance athlete that's trying to train specifically for that moment in your run, it's a fantastic practice. It's a fantastic way to train your body and your mind to power through and withstand those really, really tough miles that can get you into some trouble. But as far as like the actual science behind this, no, there's no research that supports like, okay, those who performed fasted cardio and consumed the exact same amount of calories throughout the day as somebody who didn't do fasted cardio, it's all the same. It really boils down to calories in versus calories out. I've said it again. I will always be saying this. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Calories in versus calories out. And really what that boils down to is making sure that you are, if you're trying to lose weight, then you are going to need to eat less calories than you are burning. And that's how you lose weight. So yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's an important one to differentiate the fact that it is bro science. All right, what are we at here? We are at 35-ish minutes. Cool. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate this. I appreciate your patience. That's what I wanted to say. Is I wanted to say that I want to appreciate you guys. I want to take a moment to appreciate your patience on my journey. I know that it has been an emotional roller coaster for me, and it's been up and down for you guys. Some people have, expressed concern, like, "Hey, is the podcast stopped?" Blah blah blah. And no, the answer is no. It's almost like I've just been lying in wait and planning and prepping, and now it's time to hit the pedal to the metal. So I'm super excited to continue this podcast. In fact, I'm going to be doing two per week. This is a Wednesday episode. Friday's episode is going to be where I share the journal that I wrote while I was incarcerated. And this was something that got me by day in and day out, and it got me through some really dark times. And there's a lot of self-growth in those journals, and I revisited them recently, and I thought this would be a really cool thing to share. I know a lot of people have asked, "Hey, how was it in there? What was it like? What was it like, being kind of like a normal guy, but also being a former cop and this, that, and the other?" And man, it was a roller coaster. It was very interesting. I think many people will find it fascinating as hell. But more importantly, the reason why I'm sharing it with you is because I think there's so much value from a self-growth perspective. My daughter the other day, I did something, I forget what it was. And my daughter, who's 13, she looks up at me and goes, "Huh." She goes, "That's really cool of you." And I go, "Really?" She goes, "Yeah." She goes, I don't know, Dad, you just seem like different since coming back from prison." And I'm like, "I don't feel different." And she goes, "I just don't think that that's," because it was like, I forget what I did, was something like kind, it was a kind gesture. And she goes, "I don't think that you would have done that before prison." And she goes, "It seems like you learned a lot in there." And I'm like, "Maybe I did." And so it goes back to that journal. And, you know, when you're stripped down to absolutely nothing and you're standing in your cell naked and they throw you some clothes that you're going to be wearing, and they, feed you through a little hole, basically your lunch and your dinner and your breakfast, and then shut it. It's being in isolation like that is extremely humbling. And you have, one of the reasons why so many people go crazy in prison is because there is too much silence. You can't just put your earbuds in, zone out. You can't just go for a drive. You can't just go hang out with people. You can't just go on social media and zone out. You can't just go on Tinder and swipe right. You have to address whatever the hell is going on inside your mind. And I did that. And it was very, very cool. It was very, very cool. I did grow a lot. My daughter's a very keen, observant person. And going back to just Friday's episode, I am going to start sharing my journal on a weekly basis. So we're coming up on about 1 year ago, January 14th of 2021 is when I went to jail. And so I'm just going to kind of share my week's worth of journals with you guys just 1 year later, right? So the week of January 14th through January 21st, that's when the first podcast is going to come out, and then so on and so forth all the way up until next or this upcoming October. So I'm super pumped to share that with you guys, and I really think that you're going to find a ton of value. All right, so how can you support this podcast? The easiest way is to subscribe, rate, and review. That would mean the absolute world. For those of you who have already done that and want to take it the extra mile, you can share this podcast in one of two ways. Number one, you can share it on your social media platforms. So if you just take a screenshot of this podcast, put it up on your story or put it up on your wall, whatever, and then tag me, and I'll go over the socials in a little bit, but like tag me and just say, hey, look, this is a cool podcast. You should listen to it. The other way that you can do that is by sharing it with somebody you love. Word of mouth is a really big way that this podcast grows. So if you found something valuable in this episode that you thought of somebody else and think that they can have value out of it, please share it with them. And then the other really easy way is subscribing on social media. So I'm freaking everywhere. And in fact, just this past weekend, I updated all of my social media platforms to make them a little bit more profesh. And not profesh. If you follow me on Instagram, you know it's definitely not profesh. But a little bit more representative of what I'm doing. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Snapchat, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Either it's my name, Danny Birdie, or Iron Crew Athletics, you'll find me. Okay, and then if it speaks to you, if you would like to buy a fitness program, if you are thinking to yourself, hey, look, like I need to start working out, and I need to start doing something because it's the new year and it's, you know, I've fallen drastically out of shape, or you're just looking for something a little bit new, something a little bit different, change of pace, change of direction, what have you, you could buy one of my fitness programs. The link will be in my bio. I've got four different ones, a true beginner program, which is geared towards like the elderly, somebody who's really obese, somebody who's kind of gotten morbidly obese or medically obese, I should say. And then the other one is somebody who's literally never done a fitness program in their entire life and has no idea where to start. This is your program. It's called Iron Crew Beginner. The other one is Iron Crew Build. Now, this one is for those who are looking to get muscular, just add mass, not necessarily a bulk, not necessarily getting bulky, but adding lean muscle mass. That is my Iron Crew Build program. If you're looking to change it up and get some intensity, so going back to my listener question, how often should you change it up? My Iron Crew HIIT program, High Intensity Interval Training program, is actually written specifically for that. So if you are trying to mix it up in any way, shape, or form, I would do Iron Crew HIIT for, it's only a 6-week program. And it's only a 6-week program because you can't maintain that type of intensity for long, much longer than that. So the Iron Crew HIIT program is perfect for those that are like maybe transitioning from doing a running program and then want something different. Iron Crew HIIT. If you're just doing this really bodybuilding style workout and you want something a little bit different because you're just sick and tired of the 3 sets of 10, Iron Crew HIIT, that's the one. If you are doing a CrossFit program and you're starting to feel like you have a little dings and dents, maybe your wrist hurts, your elbow hurts, your shoulder's acting up, Iron Crew HIIT is your program, because a lot of the high intensity workout programs out there are not designed for anything other than like to make you feel good and to make it look cool, or you know, to do a bunch of fucking burpees until you throw up. Iron Crew HIIT is actually a relatively sustainable high-intensity program. I still wouldn't recommend doing it more than 6 weeks, but it's definitely something that's not going to get you injured. So if you're looking for a safe way to train intensity, Iron Crew HIIT is your answer. Okay, and then the last one is the Shred program. So about a year ago, I did kind of a body transformation over the summer of 2020, and a lot of people were asking me about how I did that and what program I used and what nutrition plan I used and how I went from, you know, basically having kind of like this dad bod into like having this ripped body. And the Shred program is exactly that. So if you're looking to get shredded in 12 weeks, Iron Crew Shred is definitely got your name written all over it. Those links are in the bio. I'm sorry, the description of this podcast. If you want to buy a t-shirt, there's still some t-shirts left. And if you want to go the extra mile and literally change your life, and I'm not just saying this, this will literally change your life, is you can hire me as your one-on-one trainer. So that link is also in the bio. So I can do in-person, I can do remote, and I can do only programming for nutrition and exercise. So all right, that is truly all I have for you guys. I will see you next time.